come in a little bit. That'd be great. Well, thank you guys for coming. I really appreciate it. I know the rain's holding off for us for a minute, so we'll hurry up and go through this. My name is Antoine Pierce, and I'm running for United States Senate against Bill Cassidy. For obvious reasons, if you've been paying attention to the news, you know he has been a disaster for our state. I think it's time for us to change this state and change our country for the better. A country and a government that works for everybody. So really quickly, one of the major issues, and I don't know if you all have noticed, but COVID-19 is wrecking our state. We're number one per capita in the country for the number of COVID cases, hence we're all wearing masks, yes. And it is ravaging our state. We have millions of people across the country that are unemployed. About 400,000 in Louisiana are unemployed. We see thousands of deaths a day. I think we're at about 170,000 deaths nationwide. I think we're about 5,000, 6,000 deaths here in Louisiana, and the cases continue to rise. So we have to do something now. We have to make sure that every single person in this country is covered under health care. It is not an option. It's necessary. We have to make sure that every single person in this country, and that's why I support universal health care, because I want to see every single person. No one should die or go bankrupt because they cannot afford their health care or they cannot afford their prescription medications. Now, we know that we've seen this topic sort of kicked around like a political football in Congress in Washington, D.C. I know I've been there. But we have to act now, and we have to elect people that are aggressive enough to act on it, that are assertive enough to act on it. And I'm willing to go to Congress and fight to make sure that every single person, especially here in our state, that again is number one per capita in COVID cases, making sure that we have access, not just access, but have coverage. We all have access to $1 million, but we don't have it. I want to make sure that everyone has coverage, and that's why I'm going to fight for universal health care. Secondly, we know that 400,000 people are unemployed. Now, we saw the additional $600 expire intentionally. That $600 was saving people from being evicted, saving people from having their lights turned off and keeping food on their tables. We saw that intentionally expire, and now the government is offering people an additional $400, and if you make less than $100 in unemployment, you get a whopping $300. So that's about $400 a week to survive on. Good luck if you have a family. We know it takes about 70 or more hours if you're making minimum wage, which is $7.25 an hour. That's unthinkable. It's immoral to pay someone $7.25 per hour to support themselves. That's roughly $320 a week, somewhere around there. Check my math. $8 an hour is about $320 a week before taxes. Good luck with living on that. That's about enough to get gas to go to find a job. So we know we need to do something about the wages. The minimum wage in this country has not been raised since 2009. It's 2020. But we've seen prices go up. We've seen the cost of living increase. And yet the wages have not gone to match it. Why? Because when you own the referees, you never lose a game. The politicians are the referees and the corporations own them. And therefore, they can keep wages low so that they can keep their profits high. But we need people that have the fortitude to fight against the corporations and say, no, you will pay people a living wage. And you'll still make your billions in profit. And I'm going to tax that. Because we shouldn't, as a matter of fact, we had 60 major corporations in this country after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act 2017 that paid zero in federal taxes. $0 in federal taxes. Now, you try it. When you own the referees, you don't lose a game. So we have to make sure that we are taxing these corporations the way that we tax ourselves. the way that they put sales tax and federal taxes on poor people in the middle class. So we need people that have the gumption to go there and say, this is wrong, but you have to have people in touch with reality. I say this all the time. If you elect a billionaire Democrat, a billionaire independent, a billionaire Republican, you got the same person. We have to have people that are in touch with the middle class, with the working poor, that understand our plight. And that's why I want to go to Washington. Also, we need to talk about our environment. You guys live here on this with a beautiful lake coming through, part of the river. You guys, you know, we have to be to work to protect our environment. Climate change is a major issue. Now, I know this is oil and gas country. I kind of looked it up. I was like, oh. But I'm fearless about this because I think that there's an opportunity here. We can start to move to renewable energy, and those people that are working in the oil and gas industry won't lose their income. They won't lose their livelihood. Now, let me tell you what's going to happen. The corporate CEOs who give themselves massive raises every single year will tell you, oh my God, if we move to renewable energy now, the sky is falling. What will happen? Look at what's happening as a result of COVID. Hundreds of thousands of people in the fossil fuel industry are losing their jobs anyway. And what is the response? Good luck. Good luck. Make that $400 work. People that are making tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year possibly are being told, hey, go figure it out. But I know that we can make more money, 20 million jobs, hundreds of thousands of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars on the renewable energy. We can train those individuals, and how do we pay them? The same way we pay the fossil fuel industry, subsidies. We give the fossil fuel industry more subsidies than we pay for each individual child in this state to go to school. Sounds like a lack of priorities, but when you own the referees, you never lose a game. And that's what's happening in our job market. The money is going. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, again, allowed 60 corporations in this country to pay zero in taxes. Zero. Amazon was one of them. And guess what? They got a rebate. $129 million rebate. Try it. I dare you. Say, you know what, guys? If they don't have the multi-billion dollar profiting organizations don't have to pay taxes, I shouldn't either. Go ahead. I'll come and visit you. I'll keep some money on your books. But I think at the end of the day, we have to be thinking in terms of what we can do for working class people. And that's what's been lost. I think most people will say that they don't see a government that's working for them. And that's why I'm running for United States Senate, because I want to be a part of that government that's working for working class, middle class people. Now, here's another big issue. The money in politics. There's hundreds of millions of dollars being spent, not by you, by corporations. When you own the referees, you never lose a game. They can put hundreds of thousands of dollars in PACs to support whatever candidate they want. Is that fair? What does that mean to you? That means that their money is choosing who wins these elections and not the vote of the people. And that's a problem. We need to be moving towards undoing that system. There's a system called Citizens United. It's a Supreme Court decision that allowed corporations to act as people. They say that the money that they give to campaigns is not money, it's speech. Why? Because the corporation is a person. So if I give you money, that means it's a practice of free speech. Baloney, right? That's just not factual. As a matter of fact, go anywhere to any of these stores and pay for your stuff with speech. It's not. It's money. They're putting hundreds of thousands of dollars, but when you own them, they'll keep it in place for you because it's working. It gives them an advantage. So we need to be moving towards an amendment that gets rid of Citizens United. But there are things that we can do now. We can push our Secretary of State to extend early voting. Which, by the way, I don't know if you guys have known and realized this, but our Secretary of State is trying to undo vote by mail. Even at the height of COVID, when all of us are out here wearing masks, he's saying, hey guys, if you're healthy enough to go to the grocery store, you should be able to go and cash the vote. On that, I call BS. Because A, you don't have to go to the grocery store every day. B, you can send somebody on your behalf. And C, all of us don't go to the grocery store on one day of the year. So that's nonsense. We need to be making it safer for people to go and vote. And if they want to vote from home, we know that vote by mail is safe. We there is no significant fraud. Let's be clear, there's no evidence of fraud. I dare anybody to find it. It doesn't exist. The only evidence I've seen has been a Republican in North Carolina who was trying to vote harvest, and then they got caught and they redid the election. There's no evidence of fraud. It's too hard to do it by vote by mail. Why? Because your name's on the ballot. And if you have 100 ballots in there with your name on it, you're gonna get caught. So that's not a reality. So we need to be moving in a more progressive direction for this country. We need to be implementing policies that speak to ordinary people, to speak to everyday working people. You wake up and you say, oh my God, how am I gonna pay my bills? That's the type of person that needs to be thinking on your behalf in Congress. Unfortunately, we don't have that right now, but you can change that. You can change that with your vote. We're going back into your community and talking to people. Tell them you know this guy that's going to fight for them in Congress. He's a regular guy. I can't speak high-level, multi-million-dollar politics because I don't live there. I'm a working-class guy that's trying to make a difference. I grew up in Baton Rouge my entire life. I had the privilege of attending LSU where I earned 2 degrees. But I know that my story is not the same as other people's stories. There are a lot of people that don't have the opportunities that I was given. I was just blessed to have these opportunities. But I know that there are a lot of people that are not. And they're struggling as we speak. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to use my education. I got a Bachelor of Science in Child and Family Studies, which is similar to social work, but LSU didn't have a social work program then. And then I got my Master's of Public Administration with a concentration in public policy. So I can blend those two and create policies that work for families, and that's what I wanted to do. So I started working on the transition team for Mayor Sharon Weston Broom, who's the East Baton Rouge Parish Mayor. And then I was appointed by Governor John Bel Edwards to his board for juvenile justice and delinquency prevention. But almost my entire career has been policy development, reading policy, understanding the outcomes of what happens when policy is destructive, and it can be. It can hurt us. If you don't believe me, look at our unemployment rates now. First of all, before COVID, Louisiana had one of the lowest unemployment payouts in the country, $247 before taxes a week. I dare you to try to live on that. It's impossible. So what were they doing? They were trying to punish people who were unemployed. Starvation wages is what I call it. Starvation wages. They were trying to punish you for not having a job. Hurry up, get back to work. And even now, that's what they're doing. That's why they let the $600 a week expire. They're trying to force you back to work, send your kids back to school, knowing that we're at the height of COVID. How can you close schools at 20,000 cases and open them up at 20 million? How does that make sense? It doesn't. They don't care about you. They care about the bottom line. Who are they working for? Not us. They work for the corporations. And as soon as they can get your kids out of the house, back to school, where they can get sick, get you back out of the house and your job, and guess what they did? They put a clause in the policy that says, we will force you back to work, but guess what? If you get sick, you can't sue your employer. You think they work for you? No, they don't work for you. They work for them. They work for these high-level corporations that pay into their campaigns. Now, this is why I always challenge people that say, my vote doesn't matter. I ask them, where you work? Where do you work? How much are you making? If you're making anything under $15 an hour, your vote matters, because that can go away. I ask, do you have health care coverage? You probably don't. And if you do, you probably have employer-based insurance, and no one ever has told me that they love their insurance from their employer. You know what? I really love my employer's insurance. It is the bomb. Nobody's ever told me that. It's terrible, I bet. You're probably paying ridiculous rates for it, and it doesn't cover anything. And you still have a deductible, and you still have a monthly premium. So at the end of the day, we need to be making sure that people are not going broke paying for insurance, especially when we cover the insurance for our Congress people. Did y'all know that? We pay for them to have better insurance than anyone in the country. And they make almost 200 grand a year base pay. Let's not talk about speaking engagements. Let's not talk about travel. Let's not talk about per diem. 174K a year. We're paying for their insurance. We're paying for them to be on leave right now. They're on leave. They went on leave and left people facing, they left mass food shortages. They left people facing eviction. And we know, I think I published an article, not published, I submitted an article today that said that, I think, I forgot what the number is. Oh, there was a 300% increase in the people asking for legal help to stop their evictions. 300% here in Louisiana. So we know that there are massive amounts of people facing eviction as we speak. And guess what Congress did? We'll be at our country club. Give us a call and after Labor Day. You think they care about you? You think they're working for you? No. They don't care if you live or die. You're just a number to them. They work for the people that put them in office, and that's the major corporations. But we can combat that in numbers. The more of us that stand together and say we're going to support candidates that care about real people's issues. I don't care what's happening in the stock market. Of course I understand the stock market, but that's just a measurement of people's money, right? Of rich people's money. By show of hands, how many of you own stock?
Sorry.
You know why? Because stock requires disposable income. The vast majority of people in this state are living check to check. They call it the Alice community. They're living check to check, literally. And some of them work more than one job. Meanwhile, we give massive subsidies to corporations. I say if working class and middle class people are living paycheck to paycheck, corporations are living bailout to bailout. But they'll ask you to pay it back. They'll say, pull yourself up. Meanwhile, we give massive subsidies to corporations that have billions of dollars. Any small business owners? Did you get PPP? You know who did?
Big company.
The first $349 billion of PPP went to multi-billion dollar profiting companies. Two of them got busted and gave their money back. Shake Shack and Ruth Chris. Ruth Chris made $42 million in profit. And I think people kind of, when I say profit, they paid their employers, they paid all their overhead, they had $42 million sitting in the bank in profit. And guess what? They still got PPP. Who do you think they're working for? Not you. So I think we have to stand together. We have to promote people that are working for regular people that say, this is egregious. This is a slap in the face of taxpaying American citizens. We need to be doing more for working class people that are suffering right now. So that's why I'm running. And that's why I hope I can have your support. I hope I can earn your vote. I hope you'll go out and tell people about this campaign and what it is that we're trying to do. This is a true grassroots campaign. And I say that because we have not taken one corporate PAC dollar, not one red cent, not one red cent. Now, there are some other folks that dropped in this race late in the game. We have very similar names. We know who's funding that campaign. You don't wake up 3 months ahead of early voting and say you're gonna run a statewide campaign unless you know that there's going to be millions of dollars pumped into your campaign. Now, who you think that's coming from? You? Not a chance. 3 months ahead? Not a chance. That money, and that's the problem though, because I don't wanna have to call these individuals and say, hey, what should I do in Congress? What decisions should I make? Before I press yay or nay, please, corporate overlord, tell me what I should do. No, I never wanted to be beholden to them. So what did I do? I decided to start 3 or 4 years ago, pounding the pavement, talking in groups like this, meeting with people and saying, this is what I want to do. Here's how I can help the state of Louisiana. Here's where we can go from this point on. And it's been working. We've been reaching people by the thousands because people want a message that speaks to everyday people. And that's us. So now that we're all family here in home, I'll take questions from you guys because I didn't want to come here and not hear from you. So I will gladly take questions from you guys. If you have questions about what's happening in the country and my stance on that, I'll gladly answer. You got a question?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you touched on it with the oil industry and how, you know, we depend on it. Like, my husband's in the oil industry. Everybody, you know, pretty much that I know has somebody, you know, family in the oil industry. And I like the fact that you're thinking about, giving them opportunities to find another way, source of income. And going into, let's say, you're still being there. So my question is, how tough do you think that'll be to push that, especially down here, to get something, get us closer to that?
Oh, I think there's no question that it's going to be extremely difficult. But what is the alternative? So was your husband laid off after, during COVID?
Fortunately, he wasn't, but there were several people he worked with that have been laid off.
There are thousands of people that are laid off. And what happened was, because of COVID, people weren't traveling. The oil industry is heavily relying on people purchasing oil. The barrel, the cost of oil, cost of barrels of oil being at a certain level, so that the oil industry can turn a profit. So what do these industries do when they don't turn a profit or they don't make a margin that they think is reliable? They cut. Bye. Good luck. They lay people off. They get rid of people. Now, unfortunately, because of COVID, the oil industry was hit extremely hard. So what Bill Cassidy tried to do was bribe the folks in Saudi Arabia. He said that he tried to pass a policy that if you guys don't stop selling foreign oil to the United States, we'll pull our troops out of allied territory. So we know that oil is a major industry. We know that hundreds of thousands of people in this state rely on it. But the oil industry, the corporate leaders of the oil industry don't care. They don't care. They care about the bottom line. And granted, there are a lot of people that are relying on it, but it's time for us to start moving to renewable energy. And we can train those same people. We can use subsidies. We can give tax breaks the way that we give them to the oil industry to train those people, to offer them new jobs that bring us into the future. Because what's going to happen otherwise? It isn't less oil that's going to cost them their jobs. It's technology. If I can build an oil rig and have robots run it, or have a computer on the other side of the world run that oil rig, I'm going to get rid of all those humans. That's just how technology works, right? If you don't believe me, I didn't see a Walmart coming in here, but I know your town has one. You have 30 self-checkout lines for every one cashier, right? Why? Because it's cheaper for technology. I can get rid of, and those self-checkouts never need a day off. They never ask for insurance coverage. They never ask for a raise. You have one person working 10 checkout lines, self-checkouts. And now you're doing your own work. So now I can take that money and reinvest it in my CEOs, give it back in corporate stock buybacks, and enrich my stakeholders. That's how the oil industry thinks. I want to take care of the people that are working for them, because I don't think these corporations are job creators. The consumers are job creators. The employees are job creators. I'm going to prove it. So, if you think, first of all, the employers are job creators, because what happened during COVID? People stopped, well, the consumers are job creators. Let me start there. People stopped buying products. And what happened? These companies folded. They closed down. If they were the job creators, they would never go away. Right? No problem. We don't need consumers. We got it. If they were the ones creating the jobs, they would never go away. Consumers create jobs, because you need my money to make your profit. You need my money to keep your corporation functioning. If I go away, your company goes away. You're not a job creator, I am. And without me, you have no employees. So the employees, so that's who I want to take care of. I want to take care of the consumers, and I want to take care of the employees. If you have more money in your pocket, you're more likely to spend it. That's just common sense. And where are you going to spend it? Probably with people in your area. You're going to spend it here, and that money's going to go back into the economy. The same as the extra $600. And if you're saving it, great. Put that money away. Because we know these rainy days are coming. We're opening up these businesses premature. We're opening up schools premature. And if the rest of the country is any indication of what's going to happen here, we're going to be back at phase one. Facts. So at the end of the day, we have to be thinking futuristically. But they don't care. They just want to open these businesses back up, because politics and common sense are not synonymous. The corporations control. This is what happens when business makes political decisions. When business influence our political leaders, this is what happens. So what we need to do is take that control back and say, no, the people should decide. This is a democracy. The people should decide what decisions are made in government. But in order to do that, you have to have people in government that speak for you. And that's how we get it. We have to vote for people in government that speak for us. I think alternative energy companies are chomping at the bit. Let me tell you why. Texas, our neighbor to the west, is leading the country in wind power. Did y'all know that? See? Texas is leading the country in wind power. I think we are a haven for natural resources. We're on the coast, so we have the agricultural industry. All those companies are just, they want to come here. But we have to make the environment so that they can see an opportunity. The same way we make an opportunity for these industries that are polluting the air, polluting the water with no consequences, it's the same opportunity we can make for those companies. So you have to incentivize their coming here, which the incentive is job creation, making more money, because who are the money makers? The consumers. The consumers create the jobs. But you have a highly skilled workforce ready to take on these jobs in renewable energy, wind power, solar power. I mean, we're right here. The opportunities are limitless. These companies will come here in a heartbeat.
What holds back a Shell or these big oil companies for jumping into sustainable energy? Why aren't they jumping at building turbines?
Why fix what isn't broken? For them.
For them.
Why fix what isn't broken?
They have to see the future. Like,
they do. They're going to replace you with.
It's not sustainable.
Their future is replacing you with machines. But they'll keep that oil flowing as long as they can. Their future isn't. Now, they might begin to invest in renewable energy if they see a benefit. But their future is saying, hey, we could get a machine to do what we get 100 people to do. Future. You know, that's why. Because they have the money to replace you. It's only a matter of time. And I think COVID is really making it a reality. Because look how many people have been laid off as a result of it. And they may not ever come back. Why? Because these corporations now are hiring people back, paying them less, not covering their insurance. So the Republicans in Congress are bragging about the quote unquote job creation during COVID. That's not job creation. You're just rehiring the same people that lost their jobs in the beginning. And now you're getting temporary workers, you're getting part-time workers, there are even full-time workers at lesser wages, no insurance coverage, no personal protection, because even if you come there and get sick, you can't sue them. So no, they don't work for us, but they should. You had a question?
No, I'm just agreeing with you because I'm in that boat. Because I work oil and gas. I'm only 32, so my entire work career, 12 years, has been oil and gas. And I got laid off in April, and I just recently got a job back, but it's not even half of what I was making. And even if they did offer me insurance, I can't afford to pay the insurance that you're offering me anyway. So I'm just agreeing with you. I'm in that boat.
We do the same thing. My husband and I, we work gas and oil. He got called back, and I did it because they can't afford my position. So our per diem went from 110, 125. The laborers are getting $50 a day per diem. That don't even cover the cost of them to come and stay at that job. You know, so you get unskilled laborers, you get guys that don't know what they're doing, it's not safe now, and my husband's just gonna watch and shake his head. That's all he can do.
Yep. Those corporations don't care about regular people. They don't care. They care about their bottom line. And that's why we need people to hold them accountable. And it's a hard push. It is. It's a tough sell for people that have done this for longer than I've been alive, probably. Hey man, look, it's me, or you're gonna be at home anyway. You choose. It's only a matter of time before you're replaced by technology, or they lay you off because they don't need you anymore. They can get much cheaper work legally. Don't have to cover them. Don't have to offer them anything. No incentives. You live, you die. We'll replace you the next day. So it's me or that. That is your choice. So it's not that difficult when people are looking at life or death, but you have to tell them that that's what it is. It literally is, in the simplest of terms, it is.
I had another question. What's your stance on private prisons?
We should close every one of them. We should close every one of them. Right now, the private Louisiana is still now back at number one in mass incarceration in the country. Number one. I think the, at last quoted, we spent about $700 million a year on the private prison system. I mean, on the prison system in general. We're still number one. Why? We had moved down to, I think, number two under Oklahoma. But we're back at number one now because we're filling our private prisons with undocumented immigrants. The federal government is paying Louisiana to fill our private prisons with undocumented immigrants. It's shameful, actually. It's shameful. We should close every one of them. That should not be a private industry. Neither should the post office. Anybody want to debate about that? No? Okay. So at the end of the day, we need to close those private prisons. They have no place in civilized society. And I think we should be moving to get those folks that are in prison out of prison, especially those that are on nonviolent drug offenses. We should be working to legalize recreational marijuana. Yeah. Why? Because in Louisiana, we have disproportionately overrepresented African Americans, males, for nonviolent drug offenses, mostly for cannabis possession, marijuana possession, those types of things. And in other states, I think there's now 12 other states where people are making billions. Their economy is making billions of dollars, billions with a B of dollars in their economy for the same substance we're locking up people in this state, disproportionately African American, disproportionately male. That is immoral. That is unconscionable. And guess who runs the private period prisons? Those same corporations. Why? Because they own the referees. If I can come and say, hey man, look, keep these prisons rolling and we'll give you a little money in your campaign. We'll take care of you. Don't worry about it. Just keep the prisons rolling. You're going to do it because you want to win. They have no conscience. They have no morals. They're morally bankrupt. We should be closing those prisons. We should be putting funds where we know they work. Mass incarceration is not a deterrent for crime. We know this. If it was, we wouldn't have mass incarceration. You know, excuse me for being elementary, but it's a thing. We know over-policing is not a deterrent for crime. We know capital punishment does not deter crime. Why do they exist? Because someone is benefiting. Now, any decision you make, any policy you undo, will have casualties. Those corporations that run those private prisons, if we close them down, will lose millions and millions of dollars. Of course they're not going to support that. Of course they're going to scream the sky is falling. Of course they're going to say that you're letting criminals back out on the streets. You're going to put people in danger. Well, guess what? Over-policing them hasn't changed it either. Our prisons are more full than any other state in the country. Has crime gone away? We know it doesn't work, but it's about who has the biggest microphone. It's who can influence who. So we need to be making an investment in programs that we know in the school-to-prison pipeline. We need to be making an investment in programs we know in mass incarceration. We know that mental health facilities mitigate incarceration. We know that having social work on the school campus, universal pre-K, making sure people get a quality education no matter what their zip code is or where they go to school. If they choose to go to a traditional public school, or if you can afford to send your kids to private school, they should get the same quality of education. That's how we do it. It isn't locking people up and over-policing people. It hasn't worked, it never will. I'm on fire. Let's go. Yes, and I would support investing more money and having those individuals work in the prison system. Because first of all, I don't agree with mass incarceration. I think it's a scourge on society. And we have a lot of people that need mental health treatment that are also locked up. Now I'm extremely careful about making any additional investment in prisons or in policing. If there are opportunities where I see it works, then yes. We should be making that, but that those mental health facilities, those social workers and stuff should work in mental health facilities. But the police should be trained, if they can, to be able to recognize that. The police departments in most municipalities, most small governments, make more money than anything else. We invest more money. But that money shouldn't be going to riot gear. That money shouldn't be going to military vehicles. That money shouldn't be going to militarizing the police, providing them with weapons of mass destruction, providing them with military artillery. It shouldn't go to that. It really should be going to programs to teach them conflict resolution and how to de-escalate situations. So that's what I'm talking about. If we're going to make any investment, it should go to that. Otherwise, no. Let's put it where it works. Anybody else? I'm on fire today.
I know. I got another one, but I want somebody else to talk.
He was really good. I'm sorry. I have to leave. I don't want to be rude.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah, you see the yes.
Tell your people.
Take some information with you and take a button and whatever and tell your people to go for it. You had another one?
Yeah, so how do you, I support Medicare for All.
Yeah.
And I've seen the side of Medicaid and I've seen employer-sponsored interns. I have three of my four kids have special medical needs. It never has been in a situation where we didn't have to fight, like phone call after phone call on both of them. How, when we're fighting for Medicare for All, do we ensure quality? Because when, for my last pregnancy, for my first 3 months of my pregnancy, I was on the pregnancy Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And my doctor, who I went to for my third pregnancy, very, very nice office. But when you're on Medicaid, you go in what looks like the basement in the community care clinic. You see the same doctor, but he sees about 40 people in 2 hours. Louisiana also leads in maternal mortality rates.
Yeah.
We have the highest maternal mortality rates. And when I experienced that, I could see why. He didn't have time to listen to my problems, and I have high-risk pregnancy. But whenever my employer-sponsored insurance kicked in, I got to go upstairs on the fourth floor with a nice view and the quality care. Also, my three-year-old had a heart transplant. He needs to get his flu shot as early as possible. Our doctor's office tells us, well, he's on Medicaid. The Medicaid flu shots aren't in yet. So if we had employer-sponsored insurance, we could get his flu shots. Because he's on Medicaid, we have to wait until the Medicaid flu shots come.
Those employer-sponsored insurance companies are able to negotiate with the doctors and the hospitals on their rates. They're able to negotiate on what services are provided. I think the government should be able to do that for Medicare and Medicaid. It's only right. But we have people in Congress right now that are saying, if we don't want the government being able to negotiate, why? Because the referees are on. The big pharma industry can now call down and say, we don't want this covered under whatever.
Yeah.
And guess what? It won't be. Because none of those people are willing to stand up to them because they pay hundreds of thousands of dollars into PACs. Now, it's illegal to give it directly to you, but it's perfectly legal to put it in a PAC for you.
Yeah.
Now, this PAC that you can't coordinate with, hundreds of thousands. Put it in a pack and say, hey man, all we need you to do is turn a blind eye to those people that are getting Medicaid. Now, we also have Bill Cassidy try to repeal. Now, Matt, you went to the hospital with Medicaid.
Yes.
He was trying to repeal you.
I'm 31.
You wouldn't have had it in this state. Because he was trying to repeal Medicaid. And try to repeal the ACA. But guess what's under that? The Medicaid expansion.
Right.
Now, Medicaid expansion goes for people that are 26, but you got pregnant, so you were able to get it. Well, you wouldn't have got it because pregnancy is a pre-existing condition. So if the ACA was repealed, then guess what? Your pre-existing condition is no longer covered. This is what they're trying to do. They don't care about you. They don't care about your well-being. They don't care about your future or your kids' future. These pro-lifers.
Right.
Look, at the end of the day, if you're so pro-life, make sure my child gets the same quality of care that the private industry gets. They're full of it.
Yeah.
They're full of it. They don't care about, they're pro-birth.
Right.
And some people's birth, not yours. If you're poor and middle class, your birth, whatever. You live, you die, it's a flip of the coin.
Yeah.
But if you have money, if you can pay for private insurance, we love you because the private insurance pay us.
Yeah.
It's atrocious.
Cycle.
It's unthinkable. We should be taking care of every single person. If I claim to be pro-life, I want your child to have an equal amount of success as any other child. But guess what? At the end of the day, it's not my choice to make, is it? I don't sit there with you. I didn't go to with you. I don't even know you. I didn't go to the doctor with you when you had to choose what to do with your child, when you went in that basement and saw those old rickety machines that looked like something out of a horror movie. And these people up here are in plush recliners. And
it's amazing. It's Louisiana's Healthcare in Baton Rouge that's connected to Woman's Hospital.
Yeah.
That's where it's at.
Yeah, that's where the student workers are practicing on people. It is.
Yeah, I'm not gonna tell you about what they miss.
But those students, that's where the LSU medical doctors are going. You get Medicaid care. But that's sad.
So and what they're saying is with Medicaid for all and you level the playing field, you have the negotiating is on the table.
I think we should go negotiate no matter what.
Right.
Because I think Medicare for all is the big boogeyman, especially here in Louisiana,
yeah.
Right? It's this progressive Bernie Sanders
stuff. Employer-sponsored healthcare that COVID just threw out the window.
Well, let's say no matter what direction we choose, let's say we choose to strengthen the ACA and make sure that people with pre-existing conditions are covered, that every single American has has healthcare coverage and are able to afford their prescription medications. Let's say we do that. I think we should make sure that the quality of care you get with Medicaid, Medicare, whatever you choose, should be the same as those private insurance companies.
It's life or death.
Agreed.
I mean, Cormac, my son, has a lot of issues. I need to get an MRI. My husband got laid off.
Yeah.
I need to get laid off. He got laid off because of this. We lost our insurance for 30 days. Cormac did an MRI. We had to pay over $700 just to make sure that he was all right.
If we make sure that every single American is covered, there'll never be a lapse. And we can do it. It's possible.
Absolutely.
No, anybody ever wonder where that $2 trillion came from for the first CARES Act? Where did that come from? What about the second $3 trillion? Where's that money come from? We can take care of people. I think I read a statistic that said if we tax just the corporations that made a profit over this last 4 months, we can pay for healthcare for every American for an entire year. Just in 4 months of profits from these corporations.
Elon Musk made $8 billion a couple days ago in one day.
But if you look at the HEALS Act, the Republican submitted policy for what they should do now. Okay, we had the CARES Act, the Democrats presented the HEROES Act, and the Republicans responded with the HEALS Act. They're about $2 trillion apart from each other. The Republican plan is about $1 trillion. Their Democratic plan is about $3 trillion. So now Democrats are saying, meet us in the middle. You come up one, we'll come down one, it'll be $2 trillion. The Republicans are like, no. No. But look at the breakdown. $32 billion slush fund. Slush. Nothing that has to do with it. $8 billion of it, $1.75 billion of the HEALS Act is going to build an FBI building. What does that have to do with COVID?
Absolutely.
$8 billion. So that's $9.75 billion, but $8 billion of that is going to the military defense contractors. What does that have to do with people dying from COVID? They're going to buy shore up military bases and buy weapons and missiles and military vehicles. That's nothing to do with COVID. $32 billion written off like that. But they tell you, pull yourselves up. What? Pull yourselves up by your bootstraps, which is a physical impossibility, especially if you have no boots. Anybody else? I'm batting 3,000.
All right, so
state, where are these people going
to
go?
Maybe they do get a job. What do they do? Tell her to choose between paying me or feed your kids.
there should be people taking care of you. As a matter of fact, the governor received, I think, about $1.8 million or somewhere around there. Maybe $1.8 billion. I think it's $1.8 billion. And what he tried to do was a rental assistance program. It crashed.
Oh, I know.
It crashed. They closed it. They suspended it after 40,000 people applied.
But so I have a small business. I didn't get the money because that would make sure that I keep the AC going. I keep the water going. I keep everything going for my tenants. I don't expect money from some lady who's got to feed her kids. But I also have to pay my mortgage. I didn't have any help. So as a small business, I really didn't get that small business. That was that whole program just seemed like a total scam for somebody who had a small business and had to look at this. All these
things. Trojan horse. These multi-million dollar companies got that money first. Like, now, there might have been some small businesses that got that were able to squeak in, but most of the small businesses got robbed. They came back and added another 300, I think, 300 and something, or maybe 200 and something billion dollars to that program, and it went away too. The first PPP was $349 billion. $349 billion. I think it went to zero in like a matter of weeks because it wasn't for you. It wasn't for small businesses. It wasn't for regular people.
The rent strike. I see the rent strike, and then I think, like, Lord, there goes everything we work for. We're going to lose, this investment. We're just a mom and pop. We just need my husband run a couple of apartments to, like, just help break it up. If we get laid off, we still good. But if I got 10 people that don't pay the rent, we not good now.
Well, we should be taking care of you, too.
Yeah.
If you're a renter and you have people that are renting from you, obviously your taxes have to get paid too. Your property taxes have to get paid, and you're getting that from your renters. You're going to pass that cost down. So if your renters can't pay, then you shouldn't get a moratorium too. And I think that's only right. So we shouldn't hold anybody. We can, as a matter of fact, I think the federal government through the state should be implementing programs that make sure that renters and rentees are taken care of. And I think that's the right thing to do if you have the political, huh?
The rent freeze, it seemed like it was ill thought out because it blocked out all evictions. I couldn't do anything. So if I had a woman being beaten by her husband, I couldn't evict him if the lease was in his name. If somebody called and they were doing something bad, I couldn't protect my tenants because that rent freeze was just in a hurry and so blanket. I couldn't protect anybody at that time as the landlord. They call with everything. I can't help him. Like, that's got to be thought out. You can't just say no evictions because he can beat the piss out of his wife. I can't do that.
Well, let me tell you something about policy. You'll never have a perfect one.
No.
And a lot of it is trial and error. So you put these policies out there. They work sometimes. Sometimes they don't. You don't know the outcomes. There are intended consequences, of course, but then there are unintended consequences. So in a rush to put these policies out there, we often don't get a chance to go through the process and find out how this is going to affect. And then you can kind of go back in and go through the cycle and readjust once we find out where the kinks are. But they aren't perfect. They never are. They never are. There's always casualties at some point. But we can try our best to perfect it, but it'll never happen because someone will always be adversely affected. You just have to choose then, if it's working for the majority and how you'll handle those people that are being adversely affected. Anybody else? Cool. Well, I hope